You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Today we're hearing the Matthew version of an episode that also appears in Luke and Mark in different forms. Mark, the earliest version, is the longest and is a clear example of Jesus sparring with and criticizing the Pharisees. Our Matthew passage shortens it and flips the script to have a Pharisee asking the question to show up a Sadducee, kind of the equivalent of a spat between a Democrat and Republican. Then Luke shortens it even more and basically uses it as a short intro, setting up the parable of the Good Samaritan, which only appears in Luke. But all of them have one thing in common, and that one thing is Jesus' decisive and unconditional insistence on what is not only the essence of his whole message, it's the core of Judaism itself. Love your neighbor as yourself. Or as the phrase in Leviticus, kamocha, literally means love your neighbor as though their life were your own. No belief required, no ritual, no purity codes, no religion as most people think of religion, just kamocha. Recognize the shared humanity and divine spark in others, and treat them with the same inherent value you place in yourself.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 22, verses 36 through 40.
Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest? Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment.
And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
During the post-World War II reconstruction of Europe, the World Council of Churches wanted to see how its money was being spent in some remote parts of the Balkan Peninsula. So it dispatched John Mackey, then president of the Church of Scotland, and two other pastors from a rather severe and pietistic denomination to take a jeep to some of the remote villages where the funds were being dispersed. One afternoon, Dr. Mackey and the other two clergymen called on the Orthodox priest in a small Greek village. The priest was overjoyed to see them and was eager to pay his respects. Immediately, he produced a box of Havana cigars, a great treasure in those days, and offered each of his guests a cigar. Dr. Mackey took one, bit the end off, lit it, puffed a few puffs, and said how good it was. The other clergyman looked horrified and said, "No, thank you, we don't smoke." Realizing he had somehow offended the two who refused, the priest was anxious to make amends, so he excused himself and reappeared in a few minutes with a bottle of his choicest wine. Dr. Mackey took a glassful, sniffed it like a connoisseur, sipped it, and praised its quality. Soon he asked for another glass. His pious companions, however, drew themselves back even more noticeably than before and said, "No, thank you, we don't drink." Well, later, when the three clergymen were back in the jeep, making their way up the rough road out of the village, the two self-righteous clergymen turned on Dr. Mackey with a vengeance. "Dr. Mackey," they insisted, "do you mean to tell us that you are the president of the Church of Scotland and an officer of the World Council of Churches, and you both smoke and drink?" Dr. Mackey had had all he could take, and his Scottish temper got the better of him. He said, "No, damn it, I don't. But somebody had to be a Christian." So, what's your stereotypical image of being a Christian? I mean, a good Christian. We all have our ideas of what a bad Christian is. I love the condescending piety of Dana Carvey's Church Lady. But there's also the very real examples of manipulative televangelists and the hateful energy of what seems like the whole MAGA movement. But overall, I reckon most people, Christian or not, share the common misconception that being a good Christian means you have to believe certain things, giving an unquestioning nod to a pile of religious ideas and dogmas. But this just isn't so. Beliefs are important. I have lots of them, but I also know my beliefs aren't going to earn me any reward. They aren't going to get me into some mythical heaven or keep me out. Can you see St. Peter standing at the pearly gates with a clipboard, checking up on people's beliefs? If you can find where Jesus sets out a requirement that people subscribe to particular doctrines before becoming a follower, as Dan McClellan says, let's see it. What he did call on people to do was to change their ways, to stop being greedy, to become peacemakers, and to even love their enemies. He never wrote a book, never created a creed, never started a church, and never intended to start a new religion. He simply demonstrated a way of love, the golden rule in any religious tradition, and invited people to join him. He didn't call people to be Christian, a word which actually appears only 3 times in the entire Bible, and was probably originally used by critics of Jesus' followers as a term of derision. Early Jesus followers were simply known as people of the way, people who identified with the way of life Jesus taught and demonstrated. It was about being on a journey rather than part of an organization. So here's the problem. I know lots of people who shrink from the thought of being religious, who reject adherence to creeds and doctrines, and who, God forbid, would never turn up at church. Some of them are avowed atheists, and yet their lives reflect the values that Jesus taught more obviously than a lot of so-called Christians I can point to. Despite not being Christian, they keep manifesting Jesus-like behavior and over again show up good Christians by being on about work that Jesus would recognize in a heartbeat. So let's start off by getting it clear. Christianity is not about belief. As Marcus Borg said, you can believe all the right stuff and still be a jerk. Following Jesus is not about beliefs, creeds, opinions, or some culturally defined purity. It's about how we engage with one another and the world. Jesus didn't call people to join a club. He called them to follow him, to join him in seeking justice, resisting evil, healing the world, and, as our Matthew passage makes clear, loving one's neighbors. So the question is, can we steer the idea of being a Christian away from affirming a particular belief system back to Jesus' original intent, to pursuing a spiritual practice that seeks to recognize the shared humanity and divine spark in our neighbors and treat them with the same inherent value we place in ourselves? Back in 2009, Jeff Proctor Murphy and I were invited to the UK to lead Living the Questions workshops in London, Glasgow, and on the island of Iona. Our first week, we stayed at the vicarage of St. Luke's Anglican Church in North London. There we were the guests of the vicar, Dave Tomlinson, and his wife, Pat. Dave is not some pompous Downton Abbey-style vicar, but comes out of the charismatic and proudly unorthodox house church movement in the UK. But even as he led a team of about 15 people who had responsibility for some 50 churches, his faith was evolving and changing. Soon, he felt like he had more questions than he had answers, and in that world, that's not really what people wanted. So he and Pat decided they needed to move on, though they really didn't have a plan. So when you're making a major life change and you don't have a plan, why not start a church in a pub? And that's exactly what they did. Holy Joe's became a gathering place for South London for church refugees. These are folks Dave said were disillusioned, but who, quote, still wanted to travel with their faith and wanted to try and work out what God meant in their lives, but felt they couldn't do that in the context of church. It was a subculture that they no longer identified with. They may have felt hurt by it, angry with it, bored with it, whatever. And so the prospect of exploring what faith meant in the context of a pub, drinking a couple of pints, where no one was preaching, where we didn't sing hymns, where we didn't have Bible readings, but just an open forum for people to question and doubt and get angry and get emotional or whatever. And there was no answer at the end of the evening. There was no sort of epilogue. There was no, okay, now we've had the discussion, but this is the real answer. You know, it was kind of something that people could make their own decisions about, unquote. So, over the course of 10 years, thousands of people made their way to Holy Joe's, though never more than about 50 on any given evening. A number of years had passed, and one thing led to another, and when we met Dave, he had become an Anglican priest, the Vicar of St. Luke's, which he described as a community of people who are open and adventuresome and full of creativity and life and imagination. So, beginning this week, I'm revisiting a sermon series based on Dave's book, How to Be a Bad Christian and a Better Human Being. Inspired by our time with Dave, Jeff and I developed these sermons together and wanted to start off giving you all a chance to meet the good vicar of St. Luke's himself. So, here's a little taste of Dave from his garden in London.
A long time ago, Lenny Bruce said, everyday people are leaving the church and going back to God. And I think that what's struck me so powerfully working as a parish priest here in North London is how many people there are outside of the church, you know, who have had some relationship to Christianity. They maybe grew up going to church or they went to a church school or whatever. And it just seems to me there are a lot of people in our world who want to find ways, if they could discover them, to reconnect with God. But you know, what they perceive the church to be offering is something which is basically uncredible, which and which, you know, offers no real spiritual stimulus. It's not just about reinterpreting the Christian faith at an intellectual level, which is really important. It suggests something about spiritedness. And I think perhaps as much as anything, people have gone away from the church because there is no spirit. They don't feel that the sense of the numinous spiritedness has kind of departed from so many churches. And I think in these, you know, early decades of the 21st century, it's interesting how a whole spiritual kind of hunger has been revived in people across the Western world. And I think the great challenge for us as Christians is to find how we can connect with that spirituality, how we can resource it from, you know, the treasures of the Christian tradition, but also how the Christian tradition can be reshaped and re-empowered by, you know, what people on their spiritual journeys outside of the church can offer to us as well. So I find that a really exciting prospect. I don't at all feel pessimistic about the prospect for, you know, a more kind of liberal, progressive Christianity in the 21st century. I think there's a huge market for it out there, you know.
Dave tells a great story about the inspiration for writing How to Be a Bad Christian. He says, it was a cold, damp Thursday in mid-February, a good day for a funeral, you might say. The church was jammed with mourners, standing room only, gathered to bid farewell to a larger-than-life 73-year-old known as Fast Eddie. The conversations in the pub afterwards were the sort I often have with people who don't go to church. I lose count of the times folks say to me, apologetically, I'm not a very good Christian. The underlying guilt in the statement is disturbing. Where does it come from? These are fine people whom I like and respect and enjoy spending time with. I find no substantial difference between them and the people who appear in church every Sunday. Are they less decent human beings? Do they love their children less or try less strenuously or sincerely to make good choices in life? Of course not. So I often say, well, I'm a bad Christian too. At which point they pull back, eyes wide open with shock, or they smile or giggle at the idea of a pastor admitting that he's a bad Christian. The church has done a great job with guilt and petty moralizing, often missing the point of the gospel entirely. So, what is the point? It's not what most people think. What would Christianity look like as a spiritual practice rather than a belief system? First, it means learning to live in the presence of an unnameable, ungraspable spirit, knowing that you are never alone and that the grace and love of the divine is much bigger than any label we can possibly put on it, and it will never run out. Second, it means learning to make good choices, often in the context of community, responding to life in ways that respect our deepest sense of the dignity of others and all of creation. Third, it means learning to love our neighbor as though they were a part of us, even if they're our enemy, and of making our motives as followers of Jesus not about what it gets us, but about what we can give. So, if all that makes sense to you, if you cringe at most organized religion, if you have no time for creeds and doctrines or even church going, yet nevertheless attempt, even falteringly, to live as a follower of Jesus, then congratulations, you might be a bad Christian. The first church I served was in a struggling West Side neighborhood called Maryvale. One of the church's accomplishments that I am most proud of had very little to do with anything most people considered churchy. Some folks even wondered out loud why we didn't stay in our lane and offer more Bible studies. What Epworth Church created was an after-school program for the kids of John F. Long Elementary School. With federal cutbacks slashing after-school programs, kids who were already disadvantaged were getting into trouble, and gang involvement was going up even among the elementary school kids. So, with coordination from the community organizers at Valley Interfaith Project, we met with neighbors and neighborhood groups. We got grants from the city of Phoenix, funding from the PTA, and support from the Phoenix Mercury basketball team. We built a new lighted basketball court on church property, built a computer lab in our fellowship hall, and every day the school bus would bring 40-plus kids to the church. There, members of the church provided them with a nutritious snack before paid professionals from City Parks and Rec took some of the kids out to play games, while others worked with church volunteers on their homework, on the computers, or took free music lessons. Long after these kids went home, their older siblings would show up on the basketball court, and, under the watchful eye of a community development police officer, would play basketball until they were exhausted or the floodlight timer went off at midnight. Hundreds and hundreds of kids attended that program. Dozens and dozens of families. And to my knowledge, not one of them ever darkened the door of the church on a Sunday morning. But I'll never forget the day one of the kids asked me, "Hey, are you the preacher?" "Yeah." "Well, I don't go to church, but I know Jesus, and I sure love his basketball court." I'm proud to say that similar praise can be heaped on the Fountain's efforts, from SAWS to Family Promise to serving at New Leaf, working with non-churchy local activist groups, welcoming our LGBTQ+ and interfaith neighbors, and offering all kinds of alternative spiritual practices. The Fountains continues to confuse a lot of people. But with the rise of white Christian nationalism on one hand, and more people abandoning Christianity altogether on the other, it becomes all the more important for those of us trying to follow the way to stay faithful to Jesus' call, even if it appears to some that we're not very good at being their idea of Christian. As good Christians continue to misrepresent Jesus by fixating on a religion of exclusion, fear, and believing the right stuff, it behooves us bad Christians to continue to muddle through, doing our best to do what Jesus did, reminding ourselves that while it's not as popular, ditching religion to genuinely love one's neighbor is what the way has always been about. And if we're really lucky, our efforts expressing generosity, compassion, inclusion, and justice seeking will keep leading low information, good Christians to point out how bad we really are. And how could we ask for a better endorsement? So, may our values, actions, and putting love first lead to our being dismissed as really bad Christians, always and often. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.